whiskey, gin, and brandy. With the glass, I'm pretty handy. So join me for a drink, boys.
Welcome to the Barfly Podcast Season 5. My name is Jeff Burkhardt, Barfly columnist for the Bay Area News Group, and author of the books 20 Years Behind Bars, The Spirit of the Adventures of a Real Bartender, and its sequel, Parole Denied. My co-host and barback is Kevin Blum, editor of The Marin Dish. Sit back and relax as we attempt to pull back the curtain on the hospitality industry, and feel free to pour yourself a beverage. I know Kevin and I will. We welcome you back to the Barfly Podcast with part two of Chef Heidi Kraling, in which we discuss putting the hospitality back in the hospitality industry. Take it away, Kevin.
We're talking about the glory days, or, you know, like the fun, wild, wild west days of industry here in Marin County, and not just Marin, but when you were starting out. You're curious to, you know, see how things have evolved in your opinion.
When Jesus was a baby. We're talking about, you know, when you had Larry Mandel and Perry Butler, like, those were my peeps, were my peeps. So, you know, I might be in the younger end of those peeps. I've been in the restaurant business for 45 years. Mm-hmm. So that's, you think, wow, when did you, I started in college, but I had my first restaurant when I was 22. Mm-hmm. So it's, we've been at it. But you remember, you know, I went to cooking school in 83. And Chez Panisse was only a few years old. Then I went to work at Square One and Starts. I mean, that was it. That was the place to be and to work. And when you think about all of those who had come from there, all these hitters, like you were talking about, maybe hitters, just people who really made great food, great restaurateurs, great people in the hospitality business. But you know, it was being written about. We were gobbling up all that great. We used to buy food in wine magazine. We used to buy some year, you know. I mean, we would wait and we would open it up. And remember when Gourmet used to do those, you know, those reviews by Carolyn Bates? I mean,
well, foodies, right? The term foodies came out of that whole thing.
I mean, I'm not saying this isn't the glory days, but it's certainly different. I think we have learned how to stretch our dollars. I mean, if you're a savvy business person, you have to. I think that it's running a business, particularly after the pandemic, takes a certain amount of tenacity and biting the rusty nail and just try to really give people what they want. And I think that what's been great is we've been in this business for so long is that we have developed a clientele and a reputation and this integrity that you've tried to put in this business, mm-hmm. that people, you know, trust you. It took a long time to get there. And so when new businesses have to start that from scratch, I just go, wow.
How do you do it nowadays? I mean, you have to be, you know, a master chef and a master business person at the same time. I mean, that's
or at least have two people in
who are, right? Exactly.
You know, I think that's the main reason why a lot of restaurants fail is because they're good at one or the other. I think that you have to have some business acumen nowadays in particular, mm-hmm. because it just, I mean, it's amazing what the managers have to do to pay attention to your costs. It just blows your mind. And I know it sounds, it's not a woe is me, it's just you, it's a lot.
Yeah.
And if you are just thinking about, you know, using your tweezers to put some, you know, some curl on your, you know, some, I call it toupee. When they get to tweezers and they put all that little stuff on food, it's like, God, don't toupee the food.
Or the drinks.
You put a flower in my drink, I will just hunt you down, Jeff. I will hunt you down. Oh, I know, it was funny, one of the chefs who I just adore, and it's a lot, it's asked if I would get some pansies at the farmer's market. Yeah. And from Marin Roots, I just said no. I said, you go get them, I won't get them. I just can't do it. I can't do it. And I'm, you know.
A bridge too far.
Thank you. If you do, I'm not trying to slander you. It's just not my thing.
No. I mean,
Jeff, it's not my thing.
It's also, you see a lot of this stuff, you know, I just had a conversation with someone the other day where they were talking about all juice has to be fresh squeezed at the moment. I said, well, you know, that makes sense. And then they made a point about lime juice. And I laughed and they said, why are you laughing? I said, well, you realize the limes are not ripe. So now you're insisting that we fresh squeeze unripe fruit. And they didn't know what I was talking about. And that's the type of thing where they have an idea, but they don't have that in-depth knowledge. Like that's back to the soup kitchen thing, where you can take a few ingredients and make something truly wonderful out of it, if you know what you're doing.
Yeah.
If you don't know what you're doing, you're just following a recipe you followed for 25 years, then you get the same thing all the time. But that ability to take what you do have at hand and do that is a unique ability. And that's something that you have, and that's why that capital C, little C thing, I mean that sincerely. I mean, it's that there's the real deal, and there's these other people who act like the real deal, but they're not really that. Also, people don't understand that, like, oil is one of the biggest expenditures in a restaurant. And people think of, they wouldn't even think about that. They're thinking about the flowers or the plateware or whatever. And it's like, no, the actual cooking oil can be quite expensive. And that's the same with drinks. Sometimes the base ingredient is expensive. And you've got to work your way around that, or you've got to figure some other way, because it is a business, right?
Okay, I got a good question for you, Jeff.
No, that's not how this works.
I know. So here's my question, because we all, when we look at, you know, how you do, you look at a P&L, profit and loss every month, you know, you want to be proactive, not reactive. And I just think, I'm asking you, have the percentages changed for costs in the beverage world?
Absolutely. So basically, for instance, you remember the old well call premium, super premium categories,
sure,
four categories of drink? That doesn't exist anymore. So now the idea of having a well drink, like a well vodka drink, doesn't really exist. So you have to bring in what was would have been a call ingredient. And the problem is that the profit margin on that is not, if you mark it up the same amount you mark up the well, which is a loss leader, can't recover that profit anywhere. So that boosts all the prices up. And people don't understand that's why that's more expensive, is because what you're making it out of is more expensive.
Either you boost the prices up or you take a cut.
Right.
And that's what, you know, that's what we have to do best.
Right.
Where will we take the hit,
right,
and where will we not take
it? Your best-selling item can't be an item that you either break even on or lose money on. If that's your business model, you're going to fail. You just can't do that. Your best-selling item should be the item that you're actually exceeding your costs on. Because then that makes everything else work.
Yeah, the one that's 40%.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. And so, and people lose track of that. You'd be shocked, actually, how few bar managers can actually do a pour cost calculation. It's actually pretty astounding sometimes. They're not even thinking about that. They're thinking of the sexy new thing and the fancy new ice and the flowers.
Right?
And the tweezers. When Jeff goes to work tonight, he's gonna hide those tweezers.
Yeah.
You're not a tweezer guy.
No, I'm not a tweezer guy.
No, I didn't.
So I appreciate some of it. I mean, I everyone's got to have their own style and everyone's got to do their own thing. But yeah, some of it gets a little too persnickety for me. Bottom line is the drink has to taste good. Sure, we drink with our eyes first, just like we eat with our eyes first, but some of it can get a little, you know, over the top, like the Bloody Mary thing with the ginormous garnishes on it. Half a pound cheeseburger.
Yeah, exactly.
But again, you have to balance that. And if you can't balance that, you're not going to make it, as talented as you might be, because the most talented chef I ever worked for was not the most successful. And the most successful chef I work for is not the most talented. There's a wide range of crossover in between there. And you've got to find your niche and find out your personality and do that, I think. Mine's just not flowers.
Do you think that's true, Kevin? Do you think he's secretly...
Oh, I've seen a lot of floral drinks that he puts out. Yes. No. Well, I was thinking about it, like what you were talking about with certain inventory. Like, what was it, like a few years back where limes were in high demand and like super expensive because of some kind of cartel?
This time of year.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think it was something cartel related or...
We're into this weird thing where they make up these artificial shortages.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like that. The great chartreuse scare. I don't think there was
a great chartreuse scare. Say that.
It's a shortage. Yeah.
Wow.
And I start to think that sometimes it's, you know, like the toilet paper thing during the pandemic. Say where they're running out, and then next thing they do, because everyone rushes down and buys it. I think that's a false model now that's being propagated sometimes, where they generate a scare. And it gets back to, you know, with limes in particular, there's a lot of variations, mm-hmm, and people are really pretty familiar with just one. But the reality is there's a lot, and they're just different levels of ripeness. So
they will triple in price this time of year. And then after Cinco de Mayo, literally it'll go down by what, 25%?
Yep.
Limes will go down 25%.
Yep.
And that's then they continue to go down. Oh, it's wild.
Yeah.
But we were paying, was it last year or the year before? We were paying $100 a case.
To make a little bit of lime juice, you need a lot of limes. Right?
Especially when they're stones.
Yes. And sometimes, because again, they're an unripe fruit. And so the problem is squeezing juice out of that, you don't get a lot of volume, and that gets expensive. And if you start thinking, well, geez, the lime juice is more expensive than liquor, right?
Jeff, this is a fun fact. I've never known that limes are unripe fruit.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, we've been conditioned to believe that. No, because the original was the key lime. which has a different flavor than the fully ripe yellow Persian lime. And so they were trying to replicate that. And also limes, if they once they're one of the few fruits that once they're picked, they don't then turn yellow. They stop. And so they can stay green for a long period of time.
But so, we would have to, even at Marinitas, when they were so expensive and so bitter.
Yes.
You know, this time of year, we would just cut it with lemon because we just thought, we'll never get that flavor that we want.
Yep. With lemons, too. Like, Meyer lemons, I think, are far superior for drinks. And, you know, regular lemons are very acidic. And you see a lot of mixologists now doing acid correction, which is...
Is that what you call it?
Yeah, well, and it's weird, you know, like they use citric acid to correct the flavor profile. But remember, citric acid is made from black mold. Right? Culinary citric acid is not a natural occurring ingredient.
Doesn't sound very sexy.
No.
Or so, appetizing.
So now you're doing a chemical thing on a fresh fruit, kind of lost your way now. What are we actually doing now? Mm-hmm. You know, that can become problematic. What is every cocktail? Sweet and sour.
Sure.
Right? That's
what it is. That's, you know, for just cooking. Acid, salt. I mean, that's what we balance with. One balances salt, balances acid. Acid balances salt. So, no, we do the same, but not quite with... Well, some chefs use citric acid. Don't look at me.
So you mentioned earlier the addition of new partners that you're working
with. Oh, my God.
Or how new are we talking?
Sure. In 2022, I took on my son as a partner, Joe Kraling. Mm-hmm. And he runs the front of the house with a couple of great people. Taylor Carnes, who's the chef. And he's been the chef. Well, he's been with me for 15 years. Two of them. And then Jason Lou, who's been with me for 13 years, I think. Oh my gosh, I say these numbers, and it's almost as if, wow. And then the accountant, Cindy Rodericks, who's been with me for 16 years. So I gave them a chunk of the business. So Mark and I still have a chunk, but I gave them a chunk of the business. Like I think I was saying to you before we went live, you know, I don't do a lot of the production anymore. And there's nothing that I loved more. I love being at that table first thing in the morning, you know, just bringing everything to me and me doing it. And, you know, it's like, girl, that's just, you know, when there's jobs that most any talented person around the table could do and I still wanted to do it, that's when they had to say, step away, crazy.
Did you say crailing or crazy?
Crazy. I'll never forget. This is a good story. So Pat Hall, who runs Marinitas, we do the bookkeeping at Enceladus, and so he would come down, and he saw me one day slicing prosciutto. Yeah. I was slicing prosciutto, and he goes, "That's the most expensive prosciutto ever." And I go, "Shut up, Pat." You know, I really thought about that. It's like, for me, I would be around the table to just keep the harmony, keep production going, making sure I got to see everything, be with the people I cared about, you know, all of those things. But, you know, I also would do everything that I didn't need to do. And so as I got a little bit older and wiser, I stepped out of that. And production is probably the reeks, as you know. I mean, come on, Jeff, you stand 8 hours a day. Yeah. That's the young person's game. Not that you're not young and hip and awesome, but, you know, that's what I realized is that, you know, that kind of energy was harder and harder for me to put out. And so I'm leaving the everyday things to the partners.
You said one of the partners is your son,
right?
So how often does he come to you for advice or counsel?
Now, if I said this...
We can always meet.
Here's the great thing. I have a great relationship with Joe. And he oftentimes, you know how these young guys could just text. You know, no matter what you're doing, no matter what time of day, hey, what do they think? And so, you know, often. And I think a lot of it is because I've seen it before, it's happened before. A lot of the things that go on, they may have seen once, but you know in the business, we've seen it a dozen times and now we get it. And I'm just talking oftentimes remedial things, not about the pandemic. But, you know, we've seen that before. I think that's what I'm most helpful with are things that, here's what we've done before, here's what we could do, what do you think? So these guys, they're young and, you know, have a lot of great ideas. And so I just couch it with, well, if you're asking me, I think we should. Or I do because I want them to embrace the restaurant as if it's their own. It is their own now. And, you know, Joe says, that's our family name on the building. You know, so they were cleaning the office yesterday. And I have this big picture of my dad who's a great chef. Personal, you know, just family. He just cooked day and night, night and day. And, you know, all we did is ensaladas is eat and think about eating. And so I had this great picture of my dad in the kitchen. And the guys put it outside the office. Because I told them a couple years ago, don't you dare do anything with my picture of my dad. I said, he's watching you. I just want you to watch you. And I said, and so it's Joe texts me yesterday. He goes, they're trying to bounce your dad's picture. And I said, he goes, can I put it in my office? I said, you do that, Joe. You put it in your office. So, I mean, it's a big picture. I mean, I can understand why they did it. I'm in there in the restaurant almost every day, but just for much shorter periods of time. And I kind of get, I do what I do best. I do the business things. I do the community outreach, which, as you know, is so important to me. We work a lot on service together and hospitality together, because I do think that can be tough, as we talked about. The hospitality end of a business can be tough, because I remember we were talking about the rule. I said, you know, that if we serve, you know, 400 people a day, whether it's takeout or lunch or dinner, what have you, and, you know, if you've got 99.5% of it right, anybody would be thrilled with that. But it is the 2 people a day that...
Every day. That's what people don't quite get. It's not 2 people every once in a while. It's a guaranteed 2 people every day.
You know, I said that it extinguishes the light in our hospitality soul. That is what the youngins have a hard time with.
Right.
Is that, in other words, what I try to do is say, guys, rearview mirror, respond kindly, and just do your best. Because I think that it's easy for all of us to say, they don't know what they're talking about, or whatever we come up with, or wow, we blew it, or
right,
anything in between. I think that's what's, for me, I love the business so much, and creating food so much. And we talked about the 80s and then I lived and breathed and I walked in and I dug it. And I think that these new generation of restaurateurs, I think it's a different time for them. Do they love it as much as I did and as you know, a senior, I'm gonna call it senior chefs, senior restaurateurs, you know, it's just a different model now. And so that's what I try to help them navigate, is to find that joy in great hospitality.
Right.
To find that joy in the collaboration of a really good new dish. And the other stuff that can extinguish the light in your soul, you know, just, you know, try to balance that. And it's not easy.
And you just have to let that go.
We can say it,
yes,
and then,
well,
not, you know.
But it has gotten easier. I don't know, speaking for myself, it has gotten easier over the years, where sometimes you just know, okay, this isn't going to get any better. I'm sorry. You know, my last resort is always, well, I'm sorry you feel that way. Because what
where
can
you
I
go
do?
With that comment?
What can you do?
Yeah.
Right? I'm not taking responsibility unless I, you know, I also know when to take responsibility. I also know that it is possible to overseason something and not realizing, or grab the wrong bottle or do that. So you have to always check yourself and make sure that you're doing that. And much like you, I only work 2 days a week now in the restaurant business, because I can't maintain the level of personal attitude towards my guests that I would like working more than that.
Well said.
And you have to be aware of that, because some people aren't aware of that. And then they burn themselves out.
And then the customers feel it.
Well, everyone feels it.
Hey, Jeff, you're different. Do you realize, this is the thing, you're here and a customer is there.
Right.
You know, you are, they're 3 feet away from you
the whole time.
Yes.
Yeah, not, there's no time for me to go and back.
I've often said that is the hardest job
in
the restaurant business, is to be that close. And particularly if they're not your favorite customer. Wow.
Yeah,
you have to do to just give that hospitality, you know, the way they want it served up. God bless you.
Well, recognize that it is still their experience. It's not about me, right? I mean, it's still about them. You just have to be aware of that. And that's the one thing I really poke fun at the mixology thing and, you know, all this kind of fussy stuff. But sometimes people lose track of, it's not really the drinks. It's the people drinking the drinks. And if you can't recognize that, you're going down a very slippery slope, because it doesn't matter. You could be the greatest flower arranger on the planet. But if you can't deliver that to a customer in a way that they appreciate it, they won't care. And if they don't care, pretty soon, you know, you won't be out of business.
You're so right. And I'm really in kind of in my golden years of restaurant business. I would say I could have a trained monkey deliver my food as long as it's delicious. Really cared mostly about that, even as a restaurateur. And I realized, it's just what you said, a great meal will be ruined by bad service. But vice versa, a mediocre meal can be saved by great service.
Yeah. Yes.
And I just thought, you know, it wouldn't be me, but most of the world feels that way. So you're absolutely right. Yeah. It's really about that hospitality quotient. It's Danny Myers and, you know, all the guys that and taught us that.
When you can preach it, but people have to actually embrace that, and they have to be able to self-motivate in that regard. And I've always said a similar thing. I can teach anyone to bartend. I can teach anyone to make a gin and tonic in 2 seconds. But I can't teach them to deliver it to a customer with caring and empathy. They either are going to have that or they don't have that. And also, you know, when training people, I can recognize that pretty quick whether they do have that or not. Unfortunately, there's a lot of people in our industry who don't have that. And you can see it in the corporate thing kind of hide some of that, because the corporate thing is just a meat grinder where it's just churning out whatever it is by the thousands. Where kind of what we do is that older school kind of thing where it's more personal on a personal level. And that's different. And you can't deliver that. I mean, you can in a cafeteria environment in a certain sense, right? But the person has to care. And that's the bottom line. And if they don't care, you can't teach them to care.
You know, I went to Spinnaker's. I haven't been to Spinnaker's. I can't tell you how long it's been. It's a long time. And I brought my 95-year-old aunt and my Mark, and we all went. And I thought, you know, the view is fantastic. The waiters are all old school in black vests and white shoes. And they obviously, they're older, and you could just tell. They've been at it. They're pros. Yeah. It's like, talk about old school, but how refreshing it was.
Yes.
So we could talk about old school and, you know, it still worked. Good hospitality still works today. I mean, the food was great. I just thought, because, you know, it's Sausalito and it's touristy. I would go back there again and again because, from the host on down, I just thought, we don't often see that. Again, now think about this. I think about this, too, because of our restaurant. There's so many places it can go down. As a customer, from the minute they come in, mm-hmm. at Spinnaker's, they were awesome. The front door was awesome. Mm-hmm. You know, the waiter was, you know, old school and funny and charming. We talked about, do I want some sriracha in my linguine and clams? I go, well, I said, I'm not sure if that chef back there wants to make it. Is it pretty zesty? I said, I was trying to be funny. And he goes, well, put it on the side. I said, you do that. But anyway, regardless of that, it was just like, I just found it to be, it was a treat because I didn't know what to expect. And it all worked. And how often do we go to a place when it really all works? And that's the point of this, all of what we're saying. Isn't that what we're striving for it all to work most of the time? And so that 99.5% of the people are happy. That's our game. Yeah. That's our game. And that's what I try to do in Ensaladas. You know, I try to keep the wheels on the bus and keep that hospitality coming. No flowers.
So don't worry about tomorrow. Take it for today.
Please join us next time where we welcome industry insiders and industry outsiders to talk about the state of the restaurant and bar business. My name is Jeff Burkhart. Thanks for listening.